Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Kevin Anderson, joined by four-time NBA champ Will Perdue, 15-year NBA vet Kendall Gill. Guys, we are now through two games of the preseason. And even though you can't put a ton of stock into what we've seen so far, there are some trends that are starting to develop. So I want to start with asking you, what's your biggest takeaway after two games?
That Coby White is not a point guard. He is a scoring guard. And because of that and his mentality, I love the fact that he's aggressive and attacks the basket, can take the punishment and finish. But I think because of his mentality, I feel he's almost better being on the floor as your secondary ball handler. Meaning, I'll continue to talk about the importance of just putting the ball in Zach LaVine's hands and having him be your primary ball handler, regardless if Coby White's on the floor, Satoransky's on the floor, Chris Dunn is on the floor. I just think that it makes this team that much better, but also allows Coby White to get out on the floor, and as quick as he is, even with the ball, and their ability now to change ends of the floor.
My biggest takeaway is that Zach has stepped up and said, I'm the leader of this team. Game one, he did it offensively. And he tried to do somewhat defensively. Tonight, I mean, against the Pelicans, he did a great job offensively and defensively. He made a couple of stops on the defensive end where you can see he was, like, really trying now to be a defensive stopper, you know. And I think that him stepping up is going to be great for this team. The second thing I noticed is that they got a lot of weapons.
Yeah,
a lot of places where they can score from. And it's going to be awfully hard for an opposing team to really match up and stop them every night.
And to the second what you said about Zach, even if you go back to the game against Milwaukee, and this is the great thing about Twitter, a lot of people were putting up his improvement in the rotation on the weak side.
Right.
He was getting deflections. He was actually getting to his man as the ball arrived, and he wasn't losing his man by just focusing on the basketball when it was on the other side of the floor. So he's obviously made a concerted effort to get better. And as you pointed out in the Pelicans game, he did a much better job with his on-ball defense as far as trying to just make sure he stayed between his man and the basket and forced him to take a contested shot.
Right. And then one more thing, he's playing passing lanes great. He's getting in the passing lanes, had a couple, maybe two or three steals against the Pelicans, against Milwaukee. He had two, you know, something that he didn't do last year. His anticipation is a lot better now than it was before.
Clearly his work with you has paid off.
Well, it might have been. Might have been.
So let's get back to the point guard battle, because I felt like, including Satoransky, against the Pelicans, Coby White was the best point guard on the floor of either team. On Wednesday night. But I still have a hard time seeing him as the right fit with Zach in the backcourt, purely because from what we've seen so far in two preseason games and what we saw in Summer League, is Kobe's perimeter shot is not there.
Right.
No, but I feel like after two games, when you talk about him, talk about Chris Dunn, you talk about Zach, and you talk about Satoransky. The one thing that's impressed me was is how he plays with the ball coming off the screen. The quickness that he shows and the ability to break seams and get to the basket, but also find the open man. That's still an area where Zach does does struggle at times with making the wrong pass or the timing of his pass. It gets deflected or he turns it over. He did that early on in the game against the Pelicans, made some bad passes, and I kind of chuckled. He threw a lob pass to Luke Kornet, and I said, hey, man, remember the old saying, KYP, know your personnel. But that's still some growing pains that this team has because of the turnover in the roster.
That'd be KYT, know your teammate. I do like what Kobe has in terms of a skill set out in transition, because I think with him and Zach in the backcourt, you'll be able to get up and down the floor real quick.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I thought that the Bulls made a concerted effort in that Pelicans game, much more so in the Bucks game. And part of the problem was against Milwaukee, they just couldn't stop them. So even though you still can run the fast break on makes, it's so much easier to do it on misses. And they did a much better job defensively of, you know, contesting shots, not necessarily blocking shots, but contesting shots, limiting them to one shot, and then getting out on the break. And it almost looked like that they were releasing a player early instead of waiting till the Bulls actually had possession so they could get out quicker and look to attack the basket before their opponents, in this case the Pelicans, could get back and set up their defense.
So Jim Boylan has said that he is going to experiment specific to the point guard position with lineups. He started Chris Dunn in game one, started Satoransky in game two. We saw what Kobe White did for the majority of the game against the Pelicans. Right now, is it too easy to slot in, Kendall, what your rotation is in the backcourt with those point guards? Like, do you right now have this is who I think should be starting, this is who I think should be second unit, and this is the guy who's probably going to be getting 8 to 10 minutes off the bench?
Yeah. And my starter is Satoransky. I got Kobe White coming off of the bench. And Chris Dunn getting those minutes, 8 to 9 minutes a game. Unfortunately, you know, that's the reality for Chris Dunn. You know, he had 2 years to prove himself. But, you know, when you don't get the job done, this is what happens. You know, they bring other guys in and they draft other guys and they bring other guys in through free agency that they think can do a better job. And unfortunately for Chris, this is just the predicament that he's in.
I think Satoransky is your starter. What we're not talking about is how he's rebounded the basketball in these two games. So especially against the Milwaukee Bucks, 6 offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
I think, through 3 quarters of the Pelicans game, he had 6 assists. So I think he understands how to play the game within his limitations. And he had a couple blow-bys in the Pelicans game where he got to the basket and finished.
Yeah.
So I think he's your starter. Secondly, I think that the improvement I saw from the Bucks game to the Pelicans game with Kobe White, he should be your backup. And do I think right now that Kobe White is necessarily better than Chris Dunn? I don't think so. But if you're going to draft him, why would you then, you know, if you're not going to start Chris Dunn, why would you bring him off the bench? Because now you're hampering the progress of your rookie, who I think, you know, has shown some maturity just in a 2-game span. But at the same time, as Kendall talked about, he's been here for 2 years. He's had an opportunity. He's been given plenty of chances. I think he's an NBA player. I'm just not sure that he fits in to this rotation. And I feel like, unfortunately for him, the spotlight is on him, and he has to play so well just for people to give him any credit whatsoever, that even when he has a decent game, he's not going to get the necessary credit, and that's going to be frustrating for him. It's going to be frustrating for the fans. It's going to be frustrating for the coaching staff. And I think it's just it's in the best interest of the Bulls and the best interest of him for them to try to trade him, regardless of what they can get for him.
We know he's available. He's not on this roster because they haven't found the right suitor for him. I think right now there just is no trade market for Chris Dunn.
Right.
There wasn't one in February. There wasn't one in the summer.
I think there is a trade market, but what is the asking price? And I think you're at the point now where you're just like, you know what, let's just take whatever we can get. Let's at least get something, and let's move on. Because to me, there's still a little bit of a log jam because we want to talk about who the secondary point guard is, but I'm still going to, you know, talk about this, and I don't know if Kendall will be on board as much as I am, but I know Kendall has talked about just how much better a player Zach is with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
But he still has to make better decisions with the basketball when he's the primary ball handler. We saw in the Pelicans game, he could score. He had unlimited range, his ability to get to the basket, but sometimes the passes he makes are questionable. But I think that gets better with time as well.
So the goal, we know, they said on first day of training camp on media day, their goal is to make the playoffs. They were not shy about that. If your goal is to make the playoffs, and you also have this other sub-goal of developing Coby White, if your goal is to make the playoffs, isn't Chris Dunn right now the player who gives you more overall and makes it more likely to make the playoffs than playing Coby 18 to 20 minutes a game? Like, are those two goals in direct conflict with one another?
No. I think Coby White can help you get there. You know, from what I've seen, he's 19 years old. He's aggressive as hell, which is what I love. Can really handle the basketball, and that's what you need coming off of the bench. And from what I've seen over the past two games, he doesn't really make a lot of mistakes, bonehead mistakes. And that's the one thing that you have to have from your guys coming off of the bench. You got to make sure they're not going to hurt you, you know, in crucial situations. And, you know, that's why I think that you're perfectly poised keeping the lineup the way that you are now. You know, and quite frankly, if I'm in a pressure game, I may want that ball in Ryan Arcidiacono's hands rather than Chris Dunn's hand. You know, because I know I can trust him. You know, I don't know whether I can trust Chris Dunn at this point with the basketball and late game situations, whether he's going to turn it over or not.
And also what just makes me nervous is that, you know, even against lesser talent, Milwaukee set a lot of their better guys. Chris playing against the second unit against the Pelicans, you saw that inconsistency that you saw last year and the year before. And that's what bothers me to the point of, okay, is this who Chris Dunn is? His strength is his mentality, mm-hmm. his ability to attack the rim. But his biggest weakness is his inconsistency, because you just don't know what you're going to get from night to night. And what I've seen in these two games is you also don't know what you're going to get from quarter to quarter.
All right, let's flip to the opposite end of the point guard, and that's the center rotation. They're being very cautious with Wendell Carter. He was officially a game-time decision on Wednesday night, but it made no sense at all to have a guy that was going to be game-time playing in a preseason game. I mean, if he's not healthy at morning shoot-around and not good to go, just hold him out. Give him some more rest, and that's rightfully what they did. We saw Luke Kornet play pretty well against the Pelicans. We saw the Bulls open up a second half as Kornet as your starter. Felicio started the first two games at that spot. We all know that if Felicio's playing meaningful minutes in the regular season, something's gone horribly wrong. We've had multiple injuries across the board if he's getting on the floor in significant, you know, meaningful minutes in a competitive game. In terms of your ideal center rotation, and that this could include Laurie too at five, because he is getting some run at that spot. Who do you want to see start at center, and who do you want to see the first guy off the bench, and what do you like about Kornet's skill set in that?
Well, I think it's not even about the center rotation. It's about the bigs rotation. Because, you know, if let's just go with what their claim is. They want interchangeable parts. And when you start talking about, let's just talk about the big rotation. Obviously, your starters are going to be Wendell Carter Jr., if he's healthy, and Lauri Markkanen. And then I think your rotation, obviously, is Thaddeus Young is the first big off the bench, regardless of who he's coming in for. But my only concern then is that can you truly have Wendell Carter Jr. and Thaddeus Young on the floor at the same time? That's why I think it may change from night to night depending on your opponent, because you can't have Wendell Carter Jr. and Thaddeus Young. Even though Thaddeus has not hesitated to shoot the three in the preseason, I still don't consider him a three-point shooter,
right,
nor do I consider Wendell Carter Jr. to be a three-point shooter. So I think one night you may see Luke Kornet come off the bench first, and then Thaddeus Young come in, and then you always have one of your bigs is always considered to be a shooter per se, somebody you can run the pick and pop with to spread out the defenses. So I think those are your four guys that play the four and five position as far as whether you want to call it two forwards, a center, whatever it is. But I think that's your rotation. And then Gafford, occasionally, if you need some athleticism, rim protection, you know, you're playing somebody that's just playing up-tempo.
Gafford stood out to me in Monday against Milwaukee. Not so much, but still had some highlight reel plays, and you still saw that intensity that we saw Monday on Wednesday as well. KG, in terms of your rotation, do you agree with Will about that? Because I think actually what you just said, Will, makes a ton of sense in terms of if Wendell's coming off the floor, you bring in Thad, you slide Laurie to the five. If Laurie's coming off the floor, you bring in Kornet. So you still have the perimeter shooting.
Yeah, you still have the perimeter shooting. And, you know, I actually think Gafford will come off the bench sooner than Felicio will. You know,
I hope so.
As my third guy. So I got Wendell Carter Jr., Kornet, Gafford, Thad Young. It depends on the lineups, whether, and I totally agree with Will, you know, what situation we're in with lineups and matchups. It depends on whether you have a small ball team out there, then Thad Young is going to be there. If you have a bigger team, then Kornet is going to be in there. Wendell Carter is going to be in there. So, you know, that's the luxury that the Bulls have now. You know, they have bigs that can match up with any style in the NBA right now.
This is a question for Kendall, and I'll tell a personal experience story real quick. And I remember now we've broached this subject with Kendall about his weight and his strength and everything when he played. But this is a concern for me when it comes to Wendell Carter Jr. He's up to 270 pounds. And the reason why this is a concern is because I remember when I was with the Bulls, you know, I had had success playing around 248 to 250. In the off season, one of the off seasons, Phil came to me and said, I need you to get bigger. I need you to get stronger. Sat down with Al Vermeil, hashed it out. I came into camp at 265, like 8% body fat. Never been in any kind of shape like that in my life. I mean, I had always been in shape, but not muscular to that extent. Feeling really good. I mean, a day and a half in the training camp, my knees are so sore. I don't know what the problem is. We're doing MRIs. We're doing x-rays. We can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. I go to the doctor. They have no answers. They give me anti-inflammatory medicine. It's basically like, you know, I joked, it was like, okay, instead of two logs on the fire, now there's only one log on the fire. Another MRI, more x-rays. Finally, they said, maybe your body just can't handle the weight. I get back down to 252, 250, and it just, the pain goes away.
Just that 15 pounds.
Never had another problem. And I'm curious, because Kendall always talks about how he got too big.
Too big, yeah. Way too big.
And too strong.
Yep.
To where it affected his shot, his quickness.
It affected everything. I wasn't myself until after approaching All-Star break.
And that's like why,
right, yeah.
I'm not saying that this is causing, you know, a twisted ankle and a bone.
Core muscle issue.
It had nothing to do with the core, but I mean, he must have fallen in practice because they're saying it's his
tailbone.
Tailbone.
Yes.
Yeah. But I wanted you to kind of elaborate on it a little more about how it affected you, because you thought I needed to get bigger and stronger.
Yeah, it totally affected me. I was slower. I was cumbersome. I lost my athleticism. I couldn't jump as high. My jump shot was inconsistent because I was overcompensating for the weight by trying to jump higher. I actually saw him over at the Advocate Center yesterday, and I could tell the weight gain. I saw him. I was like, man, he got a lot bigger.
I mean, he looks like a middle linebacker.
He does. He looks huge. So,
and he's 2 inches shorter than you are, right?
Right. At least.
Yes.
Yeah, so weight gain to me is not very productive for basketball players when they come into training camp. You got to be a slim, sleek machine. And
especially with the way the game's played now.
Yeah, and you're talking to two vets here who went up in weight, and we were telling everybody, listen, this is bad for you. You know, but then when you lose the weight, you come back down, you're fine, you know. And you're absolutely right, Mark. I worry about injuries at that weight. 270 is way too high for Wendell
Carter. And especially the amount of weight that he gained. Listen, I believe it's all muscle. I don't think he's gotten fatter by any means.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I was actually talking to a friend of mine who I played with at Vanderbilt, played in the NFL. He said that even NFL players, when they put on that much weight that quickly,
yep,
it sends up red flags. I just hope that, you know, it's something that his body can handle and that he can adapt to. And because I always am concerned that, you know, when he talks about, you know, versatility, how is that going to affect him guarding the screen roll? How is that going to affect him out of
big time? It'll affect him, yeah, because
guarding guys out on the perimeter. You know, I know, you know, we were watching the Bulls game on Wednesday, but I don't know if you guys peeked and saw what Porzingis was doing with Dallas, putting the ball on the deck, shooting threes, going by guys, finishing. And I'm like, who do we have that's going to guard this guy?
Yeah. Lauri Markkanen.
Lauri gets fired up to play against him.
Now, to counter that argument, we're seeing a 6'6", 285 Zion Williamson seem to have no issues with the muscle and the weight. I mean, every body is different, but there absolutely could be something to Wendell's body not being able to handle that bulk.
Well, we don't know. But we're just voicing a concern here because of that, you know, weight gain. But as you talked about, the one thing I noticed about Zion was his mobility, his lateral movement. I mean, his ability to put the ball on the deck and attack defenders. You know, you mentioned, okay, we're going to take Lowry and have Lowry guard Porzingis. He was struggling to guard Williamson on Wednesday. I saw Williams go by him a couple times. So, I mean, he's explosive. But even though I'd be willing to lay odds that the Pelicans organization is trying to figure out ways for him to get stronger, but to lose weight. And the reason why I say that is, even whether you want to call him a power forward, a center, whatever, Tim Duncan, the best to play the game, he even got to the point where he realized he was actually better lighter than he was heavier.
Yeah.
And I remember one year we came back and we're looking at Tim and be like, are you okay? You look a little skinny. And he goes, I can jump higher, I'm quicker, I'm lighter, but I'm stronger, and I can handle the banging. But he even thought about, hey, I got to lose some weight so I can extend my career and still be able to play at the same level.
Zion, to me, from what we've seen in two preseason games with him, is a special player. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think he is. When I saw him play in summer league, I was worried about, well, his jump shot is a little shaky, which it is.
A little janky.
But a little janky. But he has the athleticism to overcome all of that. You know, we saw him play the other night against the Bulls, and the way that he's able to put the ball on the floor and get past guys, change direction, and you know, he looks like a offensive lineman. But he has the quickness of like a cornerback or a running back, you know, and that's the one thing that big men in the NBA, they can't deal with that package that he's carrying around. You know, he's big, he's heavy, but he's athletic and quick. You rarely see a combination like that.
He was 12 of 13 against the Bulls on Wednesday night, and they were all within 3 feet of the rim.
Yeah.
And he was – it's not just dunks. Like, this isn't just a – no offense, but this isn't a Tyson Chandler game in which he's just throwing it down every time. He actually showed versatility and creativity at the rim.
He did. And the interesting thing was, you know, give Alvin Gentry and his coaching staff some credit. It wasn't throw the ball into the post and let him go to work. Everything was faced up.
Mm-hmm.
Put the ball on the deck. Now, he did have a nice spin move in the paint, change directions up and under. And what I was even impressed with was his vision when he had the basketball. He had 4 assists against the Bulls, you know, some of the passes that he made, but the awareness that he showed, and there was a specific play where they had the fast break. You could see it coming. I don't understand why Lowry even went to Lonzo Ball. He should have just stayed with Zion and let Ball lay it up.
Right.
But they threw it up to him. He dunked it. As he came down, you could see him looking. Zach just kind of ran by, didn't even try to defend it. He saw Zach sprint to the other end. He immediately put on the turbo boosters and ran down the floor to chase Zach down so they couldn't throw the long pass for the easy two. The awareness of a young fella to just not stop for a second and pose and immediately turn around and sprint down the field so that the Bulls couldn't just take the ball out and throw it down and get an easy layup themselves also impressed me, because this was a preseason game.
He's Khalil Mack on the basketball court.
That's a
but,
good
you know,
comparison.
Everybody wants a comparison, but, you know, I see a lot of Sean Kemp because of the power and the athleticism. But if you know, one of the things, if you go back and you think about Dwight Howard, his rookie year when he was with the Magic, he didn't have much of a game, so they ran up and down the floor a lot. He can run. I mean, he's a combination of a bunch of players. And I think this is where you're going to talk about, you know, who compares in a couple of years, it's going to be who compares to Zion because of what we've seen in such a short time frame. And like Kendall talked about, I've been impressed from what I saw in summer league to these first two games in the preseason.
KG, you played with Sean Kemp several years in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair comparison for Zion?
I think the better comparison is another guy I played with, Larry Johnson. You know, the only thing is Larry was more skilled than Zion at this point. You know, Larry had a post-up game. He could take you off the dribble. The only thing is he wasn't as explosive as Zion, which nobody is, and he couldn't jump as high. But he could jump high, but, I mean, Zion is just in a whole different category. Those are the only differences. Because, Larry was 6'7", 250. Zion is 6'7", 285. that's a big difference right there. And Will, he's one of the guys, like you mentioned before, that I think he's going to have to lose at least 15, 20 pounds to, like, have a long career. Because I don't see him carrying 285 around, doing the things that he does for a long period of time.
Age 19, maybe it's okay. Maybe at 28.
Yeah.
But 82 games?
Yeah, 82 games, yeah.
And, unfortunately for them, they're in the West. So I don't see them making the playoffs. But just longevity, durability, that's going to have to change. But, you know, just talking about him, I mean, I hope, first of all, who sponsors the dunk contest?
On All-Star Saturday, usually it's Sprite, right? I don't know who is officially sponsoring it this year.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whoever is officially sponsoring it needs to step up and sweeten the pot.
Yeah.
To encourage these guys who are on the bubble to get involved in the dunk contest, and it could quite possibly be the best dunk contest ever.
So Zion was asked about that Wednesday morning at shoot-around for the Pelicans, and he wouldn't commit to being in the dunk contest, but he's a huge sneakerhead, idolizes Michael, and knows the context and the history of playing in the All-Star game, potentially, and certainly in the slam dunk contest in the house that Michael built. He understands that.
Well, first of all, if he stays healthy, he'll be in the All-Star game. Why? Because the starters are voted in
right.
by the fans. It's popularity. Whether he deserves to or not, he'll be on the All-Star team. So hopefully he stays healthy, but Aaron Gordon, healthy. Zach LaVine, healthy. Zion, healthy.
Because the dunk contest now only consists of about four or five guys, right?
Right.
How would you love to see those three guys? I mean, not everybody's kind of said the rematch of Aaron Gordon against Zach, which I certainly hope we get, but to add Zion into that mix would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be. It would be the most anticipated dunk contest of all time.
Yeah, it really would be.
Yeah, it would
be. Especially on Zach's home floor.
Right.
Yeah, so let's move on back to the Bulls and what we've seen in the preseason so far. And I want to get back to the second half starting lineup that Boylan used against the Pelicans. He opened the second half with Laurie, Zach, Cornette, Otto, and Satoransky. And it is the first time I can recall seeing, other than like a specialized situation, five guys on the floor for the Bulls who can all consistently hit the three.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a potential for a lineup, not only in terms of floor spacing, but what you can do ball movement and creatively offensively that is just unmatched in what we've seen before.
It is. And you know, I'm watching the game against the Pelicans. You know, through the first two quarters, they did not take a mid-range shot. All three-pointers or take the ball to the, all the way to the basket. That's what this game has become.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's good if you're hitting the three-point shots.
Which they were that night.
Yeah, and they were. But what about those nights when you don't knock those shots down? You know, what are you going to rely on then? And one of the things that I'm worried about, still Lauri Markkanen staying out on the perimeter way too much at 7 foot
He's
one.
He's not aggressive enough.
No. Needs to get mid-range, needs to drive those balls to the basket. But analytics will say that it's productive to post up a 7 foot one guy anymore.
You know, it's so funny. We can talk about analytics all we want, but I wish I could remember exactly Bill Belichick's answer to analytics. I think it had something to do with championships.
Yeah.
Listen, I understand how analytics have an important part in this game, but Kendall's right. I mean, what about those nights when you're not knocking down threes for one reason or another, or late in a game situation where you don't necessarily need a three, but you need a two, but you can't necessarily get to the rim? You got to be able to knock down the mid-range too. Not on a regular basis, but I think it's still a valuable part of the game. But I understand what you're talking about as far as the ability of whether it's Satoransky, whether it's Zach, whoever, to penetrate and just who do I want to throw it to? Because there's going to be more than one guy open. And here's another lineup that I would love to see Boylan try is Coby White, Satoransky, Zach, Otto, and then Lowry.
I mean, that's certainly going small, but at the same time, it's not that small because you got 6'7" Sato playing the three potentially in that lineup.
Otto's 6'9", 6'10", and then you've got a 7-footer. I mean, you still have guys, but now all of a sudden the creativity from the offensive end.
Skill set.
Who do you help off of?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough, and that's why I tweeted out the other day, the Bulls have weapons this season. This is going to be fun, you know, watching them play each and every night. You know, I think that Boylan is going to try all types of different lineups during the preseason. He's going to by opening day, he's going to settle on his rotation. I like what he has. The key thing here is that he has enough guys where he can plug in and match up to all of the teams in the NBA. He doesn't have to just play one way. He can be versatile. Like Bruce Lee says all the time, or used to say when he was living, become water, my friend. You know, become whatever form the water, whatever you put in, the water takes its form. And that's what I think that the Bulls can do with the lineup.
But I also, and I've talked about this the last podcast I did, and I've been adamant about this, you know, on Twitter, is that instead of waiting for that Atlanta game on the 17th, I think, you know, you work on your lineups these first three games. You know, now we have the Pacer game. But when you come to, is it the Grizzlies on Sunday?
I believe so. I have to double check. It sounds right.
And then you have 3 days of practice, and I'm sure they'll probably get one of those off. So you probably get Monday off. You can practice Tuesday, Wednesday. And then you have that Hawks game. I think he needs to have his rotation set. In my opinion, attack that Hawks game on the 17th like it's a regular season game. Because I keep hammering on this. It is paramount that we get off to not just a good start, but a great start. And I'll say it again, Charlotte, Memphis. We don't know how good Toronto is. We still consider them to be a playoff team, but obviously beatable.
Yeah.
New York, Cleveland, Detroit, the Pacers, you know, without Oladipo. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got the Lakers. You got Atlanta, who's much better. You got Houston. And then, you know, Milwaukee's coming in, Brooklyn. It's just that first eight games, I think, is paramount that, you know, listen, I would love to be 6-2, but I think 5-3 minimum. We can't afford to be 4-4 after the first eight.
Now, we know that them blowing a 23-point lead against the Pelicans means absolutely nothing with the lineup.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
But we've seen, although a small sample size, we've seen what the new guys can do. We've seen what the rookies can do, and we certainly have seen what Zach is now taking to the next level this year. Are you ready to say the Bulls are back? Are you ready to, not saying playoff Bulls, but are you ready to say this team is back and they are certainly will be in the playoff hunt? Or do you want to see more?
I need to see more.
Yeah, I need to see more too.
Because also what I've seen is that Orlando's gotten better. They were a playoff team. Mm-hmm. Miami's obviously gotten better with Jimmy Butler. Now they're a playoff team. But the other teams that are coming in that were, you know, from the West, New Orleans obviously gotten better, but they're young. But Sacramento's gotten a lot better. I'd already talked about Atlanta. All of a sudden, Brooklyn, Boston, the East isn't as weak as people wanted to make it out this during the offseason. It's a lot better than people think. I know everybody wants to focus on the West, but the East as a whole is a lot better than people think.
There are some bottom feeders in the East. I mean, what we're going to see out of Washington and Charlotte and probably Cleveland this year are like, I'm not certain that Charlotte and Washington are going to combine for 30 wins. Like, I don't think they're combined for 30.
I agree with you, but unfortunately for the Bulls, we don't play them every night.
No, but getting back to the East. So, to me, the last two teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs and the last two teams to miss out are going to be, in some combination, Miami, Orlando, Detroit, and Chicago. Those are the four teams going for two spots in my mind right now.
Right.
What about Brooklyn? You throw Brooklyn in there too, right?
I would put Brooklyn ahead of the 7 or 8 seed. Like right now, I would put them as 5 or 6 in the East. Certainly not having Durant for the entire season is going to hinder them. Right. But they still have a really good team. And I still think losing Russell and getting Kyrie is a plus. And Boston doesn't think so. But I would put Brooklyn as at like 5 or 6 in the East. And
okay.
So 7, 8, 9, 10 are those four teams I just mentioned.
Right, because you're obviously you have Milwaukee and Philly, and then it's a scrum after that.
Yeah.
You're talking about maybe that second level is Miami, Orlando, Brooklyn, Boston, Toronto. And like you said, the next one is Indiana, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta.
Right. I mean, the Pacers are going to get Oladipo back.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what? I would actually put Toronto down in that rung where we are, too.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be a lot different without Kawhi.
I mean, Siakam's got to really step up if they're going to maintain being top.
But, it's kind of interesting. I know, we have our own Twitter account where we're talking about the games, what we want to show for video and stuff. And Matt Peck put on there from the Outsiders, oh, this team is fun. I said, yeah, they're fun to watch. But winning 30-some-odd games and not making the playoffs still sucks.
Right.
Are they going to be better? Absolutely. Are they going to be fun to watch? Absolutely. But are we going to be gritting our teeth on a lot of nights because they've had games that they should have won that they let slip away? And all of a sudden, here we are in the middle of March, and now it's getting to the nitty-gritty, and everybody's now really focusing on every single game. But yet you start counting all the games they let slip away in November, December, January for one reason or another. And you're like, well, they got to win, 8 out of the next 10. And we always keep going back to there's that 8-game span in late March, early April. Where
they can't play catch-up. You cannot be playing catch-up.
Right.
If you're 2 games back or 3 games back of the 8th seed with 3 weeks to go, you're not getting in the playoffs.
Not with their schedule.
No. So the theme is realistic expectations, Will.
I initially thought that 35 wins would be a really good season. I know Kendall and I said they have the ability to make the playoffs, in my opinion. But it just so much has to go right. And it's not just about being healthy. Some other things have to go wrong for some other teams. And that you don't wish harm on anybody, but maybe somebody gets hurt or something that takes one of these teams that we've just mentioned above Chicago and really diminishes their ability to make the playoffs. But their defense has got to come together.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a 2-game set, but they gave up 97 points to Milwaukee's B team maybe their B and C team after three quarters. Now, a much better job against the Pelicans, but still a lot of lapses on defense. But I did appreciate and like the effort much better than I did from the Bucks game. But they still have to show a lot more improvement, because the one thing that I would say is now we have more scores, but are we at a point yet where if this team needs to make a stop, we truly believe they can make that stop to win a game?
Not quite there yet.
Not yet.
Well, we've got the rest of the preseason to get to, and certainly the 82-game regular season, of which you can see literally every single game on NBC Sports
Chicago
and the My Teams app. The rest of the preseason, all 82 regular season games, and hopefully the first round of the playoffs.
Or the second round, the third round.
Well,
championship round.
Championship. We want a Miami Beach vacation for the Gill household.
That's right.
No,
Turks and Caicos.
Oh, you're really going for it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
No,
to Miami
North Beach. Avenue Beach vacation. So for Kendall and Will, I'm Kevin Anderson. Thanks for listening, everybody, to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcast, Spotify. We've got three more preseason games, and then the regular season kicks off on October 23rd. We'll have an hour pregame show that night leading up to opening night for the Bulls. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.